May, National Cancer Research Month. So let's talk about it with those on behalf of the Van Andel Institute. Today, Dr. Peyton Stevens discusses what makes pancreatic cancer difficult to detect and what is next for the research. Dr. Peyton Stevens, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Postdoctoral fellow at Van Andel Institute. I know you study some of the ways cancer is able to progress in the body. Your work in the lab of Dr. Bart Williams, focusing on understanding the mechanisms, yes, that do give rise to pancreatic cancer. And I guess the first question is this one of the more difficult cancers to detect?
That's a great question, Shelley. This is one of the most deadly cancers that there is, and most of that is because that it's so difficult to detect. And that's because the actual physical location within the body makes it hard to feel a pancreatic tumor. So if you think about if you're feeling yourself or whether it's your physician using their fingers to feel your abdomen during your yearly physical, you're not going to be able to feel a pancreatic tumor. And also that makes it very hard to image. It's behind your other organs, such as your stomach or intestines. So if we do know someone has a family history or genetic mutations that put them at an increased risk of pancreatic cancer, then we can use some specialized imaging techniques, but not everybody's going to get that. And lastly, the type of nerves within the pancreas are not exactly the most sensitive. So oftentimes if you have pain or discomfort from pancreatitis or pancreatic cancer and you go to your doctor, oftentimes these are attributed to other conditions, just as upset stomach or chronic indigestion.
Thank you for that reality, and yet hope, hopefully one day on the horizon as you spend your niche, your current research focus as it relates to pancreatic cancer. Tell me how you spend your days.
So currently only about 10% of patients diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, that actually occurs while the tumor is only in the pancreas. So this leads to two ways of thinking about research. The first way is obviously to detect pancreatic cancer earlier. That's what another researcher here at the Van Andel Institute focuses on, and that's Dr. Brian Hobb. And then the other way of thinking about this is to think about the 90% of the patients that are going to be found after their pancreatic cancer has moved to another site in the body or metastasized. And that's what my current project focuses on. So I focus specifically on a protein that becomes more abundant over time or is upregulated in those metastatic cancers. We think this protein actually assists the cancer in moving away from the primary tumor to places such as the liver. And ultimately, it's the spreading of the tumor throughout the body that's the main cause of shorter lifespan for the patients.
Yes. Does your research have implications for other types of cancer?
So as I mentioned, pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly cancers. But again, that's because it's very difficult to detect. But not only that, but because it spreads to other organs very quickly. However, all cancers have the potential to metastasize and spread to other organs within the body. So yes, I'd say my research will prompt others to look into the group of particular proteins that I study and see if they're playing a role in the metastasis of other cancers.
Wonderful. What's next for your research?
So biomedical research is primarily funded through the federal government or nonprofit organizations such as the American Cancer Society, or ACS for short. So when I developed these ideas that I just described, I submitted a research proposal to ACS. It's well received, and it's actually now funded by the local Michigan chapter. I consider myself lucky to be part of such an outstanding organization who chooses to fund early career scientists such as myself. So what's next is actually in the research that I propose to the ACS. So in cancer research, we always want to know the reason why things occur. It's never just enough to observe something. So while we know that the increase in the protein that I study, named the Frizzled-6 receptor, occurs in pancreatic cancer, and as pancreatic cancer progresses, we don't know exactly why that happens in the first place. And secondly, while we think that the increase in the receptor helps the cells move away from the primary tumor site, we need to prove that, and we need to know what other proteins are involved in that process. It's never just a single protein acting by itself. There's always multiple proteins interacting with each other, and we need to understand all of those complex interactions before we can design a drug to block those proteins and slow down or prevent pancreatic cancer progression.
Talk to me where we learn to go for more.
So for general questions about cancer or pancreatic cancer, or even how you can support a project just like mine, you can visit the American Cancer Society's website at cancer.org. The ACS has information on all types of cancer and treatments to prevent it or present it in a way that's very easy to understand. And then for more specific information about what research is going on here in West Michigan at the Van Andel Institute, people can visit vai.org. There you can find information about what each specific laboratory is studying, and then my information is going to be located underneath the laboratory of Dr. Bart Williams.
Great. Gentlemen, good guy he is as well. All right, stay the course, Dr. Peyton Stevens. I want to interview you once you, well, have found either the cure or a significant finding. So thank you for your work.
Thanks.
All right, back to work you go. Dr. Peyton Stevens, again, postdoctoral fellow or fellow at Van Andel Institute, studying some of the ways cancer is able to progress in the body. Of course, pancreatic cancer, a niche. Thanks. Let's get the answer to this question. Should NFL players opt for surgery after shoulder injury? Henry Ford Health System, a study finds that, well, what is the answer to that? We won't give it away now. I'll let my next guest do such because he was involved in the study by his team with sports medicine researchers. Cutting to the chase, Dr. Lafi Khalil, fourth-year sports medicine resident in Henry Ford's Department of Orthopedic Surgery Studies lead author. Dr. Khalil, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Quite welcome. How are your shoulders these days?
My shoulders are doing great. Luckily, I'm not involved in any of these contact sports.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure many has many dreams to be an NFL player can come true. Or again, you are the star or the player in your own backyard. But we know the importance of shoulder safety in many of our sports. So I want to get right into our conversation, Dr. Khalil. Thank you for your service in the world of orthopedic surgery. Let's talk about the study you recently led and why.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think this is a topic of interest to a lot of players, coaches, organizations, and definitely it can be a tricky one to treat. And so we wanted to investigate, these shoulder instability injuries. And I want to define shoulder instability first. It's really a spectrum of injury. It can be something as simple, or maybe I shouldn't say simple, but it could be a subluxation event where the shoulder is unstable and it kind of slips in and out, but not a frank dislocation. And that can range all the way to a frank dislocation where the shoulder completely comes out of the socket. And along this spectrum of injury, there can be a lot of different findings, a lot of different injuries associated with it. So you can have just soft tissue injuries, you can have bony injuries, you can have a combination of the two, and you can have bony injuries on the glenoid side, which is like the cup, and you can have bony injuries on the humeral head side, which is kind of like the ball. And so depending on how these interact with one another, the location of these injuries, there can be a lot of different ways to treat them. And so our study wanted to see, well, how are these being treated in professional athletes who obviously have a lot on the line in terms of their career? And, should they have surgery? Should they not have surgery? And what are the outcomes of either treatment? And in terms of outcomes with a professional athlete, the things that we're interested in is their ability to be on the field. And we call that game utilization. Are they being utilized in the game? Are they playing games? Are they starting games? Are they participating in a large percentage of snap counts, things like that? And then their performance, how are they actually performing? And so we compared players who had surgery to those who did not have surgery.
Wonderful. And half a step back, you might have mentioned this. What type of shoulder injuries are the most common with NFL players?
So of all shoulder injuries in NFL players, a quarter of them, so roughly 25%, are actually shoulder instability events. And like I just said, instability is a spectrum of shoulder injuries where you can have a subluxation to a frank dislocation. And along that spectrum, there's a large variety of ligamentous, labral, chondral, and of course, bony injuries that can occur as well. So this is a large proportion of shoulder injuries.
Wonderful. So here we are conducting your survey, of course, and moving to the results. What'd you find?
So we evaluated players who had a first-time dislocation in the NFL, so no prior history of dislocation before they entered the NFL. And then we compared those who had surgery after that dislocation to those who did not have surgery after that dislocation. And when we found that in the 58 players who had surgery, they played more seasons. They played on average 4.1 seasons, whereas the 33 players who did not have surgery played on average 2.8 seasons. And that was a significant difference. Interestingly, within those seasons played after returning from the injury, whether they were operative or non-operative, both groups showed similar game utilization and similar performance. So what that means is that we did not find any difference in the number of games played or started, the number of snap counts, either on offense or defense, and the performance metric that we considered in these players, the season approximate value, which is a performance metric that takes into account each player's relative contribution towards their team's success. There's a different formula for every single position, so there's no one formula fits all. Every single position has a different formula to kind of understand their contribution towards their team. And in that performance metric, it was similar between both operative and non-operative players. So really the main finding here was that you could go either way, and it's probably more of an individualized decision. Interestingly, we did have some significant findings. We found that in the players who had an operation, so who opted for surgery, they actually had a reduced recurrence rate. So they only had a 27% recurrence rate as compared to 50% in players who did not have surgery. And then of those who had a recurrence or a second injury, the players who had surgery had a longer interval before the recurrence. So 105 weeks, almost 2 years without a recurrence, whereas those who did not have surgery, about 25 weeks before they had a recurrence. And then, of course, on the flip side, the benefit to those players who did not have surgery was that they were able to return to play a lot faster. So players who did not have surgery returned in about 5 weeks, whereas players who did have surgery, it took 36 weeks, almost two-thirds of a year, in order to return to play.
Goodness, thank you for that. And I know that the study is available for our perusal. Lastly, Dr. Khalil, what does this mean for younger players or those, you know, wanting to go to the NFL as players and avoid shoulder issues?
Well, two-part question. First of all, to avoid shoulder issues, you really have to be smart with your training. You have to be smart with your strengthening. There's a lot of dynamic stabilizers of the shoulder, mostly your rotator cuff muscles and all the surrounding muscles, and you have to pay attention to those and not neglect them. That's kind of a really long discussion to have, but in terms of the, you know, what does this paper kind of show? This paper really shows that you can have similar game stats, similar game utilization and performance, whether you have surgery or not. And so really, this should be an individualized decision based on the characteristics of your injury. Like I said, there's a large spectrum of injury involved here, and players can have injuries that have large broken bones, you know, bony Bankart lesions, Hill-Sachs lesions, and those bony aspects can engage and not engage. And in those situations, surgery might be appropriate. In other situations where there's just a soft tissue injury, just a ligament or labral injury, those situations might be able to be rehabbed. And so it's really an individualized process. And a player should also take into account what their goals are, whether they want to get back faster in 5 weeks so that they can make the playoffs, or whether they are looking long-term to having a longer career in the future. And that, those goals change with whether you're a high school player, college player, or a professional athlete. And so an honest discussion with your surgeon is definitely indicated. But the good news is that whether you decide to have surgery or not surgery, overall, your performance should be maintained. We don't expect your performance to take a detriment.
Wonderful. How do we find out more information?
Well, a great way to find out more information is to visit our website at Henry Ford Hospital. You can Google Henry Ford Sports Medicine. You can get in contact with one of our sports medicine providers. We have primary care providers specialized in sports medicine, as well as orthopedic surgeons who specialize in sports medicine. And from there, you know, you can find a lot of valuable resources. And of course, speaking to your surgeon and clinic honestly about your options if you do have one of these injuries.
Dr. Laffey Khalil, you an MD, a fourth-year sports medicine resident. Go get them. Thanks for your service, and thanks for this conversation about your recent study.